Welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast, where we talk about how to create, preserve, and pass on generational wealth without the roller coaster ride of the stock market. And now, here's your host, Stephen Libman, managing partner of Integrity Holdings Group.
Welcome back to the Free From Wall Street podcast. My name is Stephen Libman. I'm your host, managing partner of Integrity Holdings Group. I'm here with Damian today, and we have a lot of fun things to talk about. If you're a data person, you like to understand the why behind what it is that we're doing on Free From Wall Street. Damian's going to give us some great insight. So thanks a bunch for being on the show, man.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. We're going to talk about some So Damian and I connected, and you know, he is ironically in the same town as I am here in Toms River, New Jersey, and really interesting because it's a small world. We don't find a lot of real estate investors in our neck of the woods, do we?
No, we don't. Actually, that's one of the reasons I saw that you were local, and I said I have to reach out because you know I can't talk about football teams anymore with my neighbors. I need something else.
Right. Yeah, let me please go out for coffee and talk business and strategy and
exactly
wealth creation. So awesome. So yeah, give us a little bit of background of kind of where you came from, where you're at now, what are you doing, and what your focus is.
Well, other than moving to New Jersey from Long Island, the background is my company is Damers Capital. We're, I like to say, an accidental money management firm. Because a little over a decade ago, my now partner and I, we teamed up basically just to better manage our own money so that we could try to achieve financial freedom. You know, we started off actually doing non-real estate things. And basically what we did is I was a research analyst and I had went to school for quantitative finance. So ironically, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, I'm trapped between two worlds, the Wall Street world and the real estate world. And they don't
I love that, by the way, because I think it's going to be able to give us some insight into both. And I've said it on the show a bunch. It's not that I'm necessarily anti-Wall Street, right? I mean, there's some issues that I think the normal investor has that they should watch out for with Wall Street that you probably can overcome because you're still managing your own capital. But I love the fact that you have both viewpoints so we can get an honest take on somebody that's in both of those types of markets. So I'm excited to dive into that with you. So
yeah. And you know, you made me think a lot about it too. So I actually prepared a little bit of a list of things that real estate guys get and don't get, and same thing for stock guys. And I think it'll be an interesting comparison. At the end of the day, I think they could both learn a lot from each other. And at the, also there's no one stock or real estate investor. So, but we'll get into it. And anyhow, originally we started off pulling in data sets from all different types of assets all over the world. And we were looking for quantifiable edges that we could basically find in that data to make trading decisions. And you know, to this day, we trade algorithmic trading models to buy and sell our accounts. And we did so well with that that friends and family started to get interested in what we were doing. And we realized that we had built enough infrastructure from technology that we could easily trade, you know, 1,000 people's accounts at the same time that we traded all of ours. And you know, a few years ago, we actually launched the public. So we actually have co-investors that also invest their money alongside ours in our models. And roughly about, I think it's 3 or 4 years ago now, we launched a real estate private equity funds. And one of the things that we're going to talk about is we believe in radical diversification. In a way that I don't see happening very often. And because of that, we will hold things, you know, in physical real estate. We actually focus in the mobile home park niche and self-storage, primarily mobile home parks. We have a diversified mobile home park portfolio. We have interest in roughly over 40 properties, mobile home parks throughout the country. And I think it's about 18 states, a couple of thousand rentable units. Wow. But what you'll see is that we have probably the weirdest portfolio that you'll see. It's not weird to us, but it's strange to most. So, you know, and the reality is there's a Ray Dalio quote that I love, and he says, the holy grail is 15 unrelated or uncorrelated investments in one portfolio. And there's truth in that, not just because of the common sense of it, but mathematically. And, you know, we're basically just working to find and put together smart things that basically lower risk and boost returns. So we're looking for that free lunch you get from diversification, and nobody does it right. So
yeah, that's but people do it more right and people do it less right.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, nobody has a perfect model for this, but if you can hedge downside risk with increased yield, then you're doing, you know, what you should be doing. It's just, you can't pick something off of a dartboard, right? I love the monkeys picking stocks conversation. Oh, yeah. Right? It's like a bunch of monkeys through, you could throw darts at stocks and monkeys could pick maybe better and beat the traders. So
sounds like you know a lot about our algorithms.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So yeah, very interesting background. And I love the fact that you got started young. I did not get started that young. I didn't actually make my first investment until I was probably 25, and it was a fix and flip or a wholesale. And we've been in real estate exclusively since then. And now we have moved into some diversified things that we've talked about too. But it's interesting to see that you can build a software program around algorithmic type trading and then put in some of these, you know, financial models, for lack of a better term, and figure out how to maximize your portfolio. And, you know, that's some smart guy stuff that I don't really play around with, but I love the fact that you were able to figure it out and then expand on it and then have success and find kind of your tribe, right? The people that know, like, and trust you to say, here, I'm going to give you some of my capital and I'd like to see similar returns.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think is really interesting is when you do things for your own capital, you just think very differently. And I think at the end of the day, the thing that our tribe, as you put it, appreciates the most is that they're co-investing with what we do. So I don't know, like I'd love to share some of the things that I thought of while thinking about real estate and stock guys though.
Oh, I'd love it. Let's dive in.
All right. So I'm going to start off with the things that I think real estate, I'll do in quotes, guys. I know it's not all guys out there, but the real estate folks really get. And it's not that none of the stock guys don't get this, but I think real estate investors excel at this. And the first one I'm going to say is understanding leverage. And I don't just mean in terms of borrowing money. Real estate investors are incredibly resourceful in my experience. And what I mean by leverage is they know how to do a lot with a little. And it's a little thing that I think people in traditional portfolios, stocks and bonds, they're not thinking about capital efficiency or just how to get more from their hard-earned savings the way that a real estate investor is. So I think that's the first one. And I wish that was learned more and was transferable more to stock guys. So if you have any points or ideas on that, just interrupt me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great point. And because I was never in the market, I'm not sure exactly how, you know, traditional fund managers are thinking about this. But yeah, we like to leverage a lot of things, right? We like to leverage our people, our products, our SKU sheets. I mean, everything across the board, we're trying to figure out where to compress the capital gain. Like, you know, if I'm going to buy 3 pieces of granite, I'm going to buy 220 pieces of granite, right? I'm going to get that price per square foot way down, and I'm going to create efficiencies in my unit turns and in my capital raise process and in my investor portal updates. And so I appreciate the fact that you brought it to just outside of mortgage and lending and, you know, things like that, because it does go beyond that, I think.
I really think it goes beyond that. I mean, at the end of the day, I think of even, you know, on the non-real estate side of our portfolio, I consider it a business. And even the way the structures, the entities that they're in, you know, I think there's alpha that can be created. We actually have a program that is like a learning program that we call Structural Alpha, where it's less about what the investment is, but it's the structures of where you put your investments and the multi-year plan you have of how they're going to go from point A to point B creates alpha. And alpha is outperformance or beating the market. And you can often create more alpha easier through structure than you can through the investments themselves, because you're not you know, you're not competing, you're not taking somebody else's lunch when you do that. You're just taking advantage of rules that exist.
Well, and I think the big difference between guys like you and asset financial advisors that are just worried about assets under management is, you know, you're trying to figure out the most efficiency for your capital because you're co-invested and you're just trying to win for everybody. And I'm not saying that financial advisors don't typically do that, right? But having skin in the game versus assets under management, it's just a different thing. And if you want to learn more about that, obviously we'll give you Damien's information at the end. You guys can reach out to us too. I mean, it's an important distinction, you know, to talk about what Fidelity does versus what Damers Capital does versus what Integrity Holdings does. It's a distinction that we won't get into right now, but it's an important one to have. So, all right, what's next on the list?
You got it. So you kind of hit two of them. I'll bundle them together. Real estate investors just understand debt financing way more than stock guys. And on top of that, taxes too. So, you know, an understanding of a stock guy from when it comes to taxes is like, oh, there's like deferred plans or, you know, qualified plans like IRAs. And that's where it kind of stops. Whereas, you know, I mean, we had a conversation the other day talking about the changes to cost segregation in this year. And I know because all my investors just got their K-1s back and it was unbelievable how much, you know, of a write-off we're going to get in this year because of the CARES Act.
Yeah.
So there's just a simplicity level there that's just, it's not, and believe it or not, there are so many ways to tax loss harvest in a regular stock bond portfolio too. Mm. I feel like those guys aren't thinking that way. There's almost like, you know, cost segregation level stuff.
You can utilize in the market, but that just typically isn't getting utilized.
Most investors are just letting write-offs like disappear. Some people die and they don't take full advantage of the write-offs because of the way they had it structured. Like they could have had, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars written off, but they outlive it because it's structured the right way. So, I mean, it's really involved stuff, but it's there and real estate guys get this stuff. You take advantage of it on the quarter basis. And, you know, some of these people on the stock side don't take advantage of it in their entire life. Wow. So it's powerful. The next one, and this one is, I think maybe the most powerful, real estate investors understand that principal is not cash flow. It just can't be. So financial advisors, the typical advisor, they'll actually build a plan for your retirement to drain down, you know, your resources. So you basically are selling off your estate to pay for the estate, you know, and that's with the classic 4% rule or whatever. And it's because traditional portfolios don't have the yield to basically create the profit to live off of. But a real estate investor never does that. They don't sell fractions of their properties or properties entirely to pay for their
live off of.
Right. Yeah, like it's just like this backwards thing that's accepted in that world. And I take issue with it. So, and the last one, and I think this is the fundamental difference between stock and bond and real estate guys, is that real estate individuals are typically incredibly competent and confident in their ability to fix things. And because of that, they see the value in active management to affect change, to force appreciation in some places or to reduce or remove risk. Whereas the stock guys, they see a problem and instead of fixing the problem, their answer is typically to diversify the problem, to buy more and more and more. Whereas a real estate guy looks to fix the problem. And there are ways of managing a stock and bond or traditional portfolio to fix the problems as opposed to just buy more of them. And there's actually an Instagram post that I put together or a tweet recently where I took, through the COVID crash, I took, I think it's something along the lines of, you know, you simply can't, remove risk by just diversifying it away or buying more of the same thing, something along that lines. And the example was you have the Dow index, which fell something like 25%. That's 30 stocks. The S&P 500 stocks, it fell about 26%. Then you have the Vanguard Total Market Index is about 3,600 stocks. It fell about 26%. So the more you bought, it didn't create any diversification, whereas because they're not solving the problem. Yeah. And I feel like real estate investors, they realize you have to solve problems and you can get paid for them. And you can do the same thing in a stock bond portfolio. People just aren't thinking that way. They're just like, oh, I'll just keep diversifying.
So that's an interesting point. I mean, I know... So I have my own take on why I think that difference in mentality exists, but why do you?
Well, it kind of, I think there's a little bit of a narrative, which is part of the part where I think both of you guys are on the same page. And it's frustrating to be in between the two of y'all. Sure. It's my Long Island y'all.
Y'all.
So, and it's that, you know, the guy that's investing, that doesn't invest in real estate, he's like, listen, I don't want to have a bad tenant or an EPA thing or any sort of problem like that. That is exactly the opportunity that the real estate guy is looking for, because he's looking to fix that. So I think it's just, I think it has something to do with like the internal confidence to not need diversification, because you know, the real estate guy is like, I'm the diversifier. I'm the guy that can fix these problems. It's like a locus of control thing. It's internal. Whereas I feel like most of the stock investors, they don't have that. And because of that, they, I don't want to say abdicate it, but they'll outsource it to.
Let's just take a mutual fund, for example, right? I mean, if I'm a stock investor and I'm in a mutual fund and that fund goes down, I mean, how would I solve any problems? I feel like it's so far removed from my ability to solve any problems that exist there, other than selling it or trying to get into something else. I mean, what do you do as an investor in the market that sees problems? I mean, I know that from a real estate perspective, when a problem comes, you know, we have a bunch of experience, you know, 50 years experience on our team of just finding and solving problems. So I think that's where the confidence comes from, is we know that there's not anything that can come up that we can't overcome. But that's part of why we steer away from the markets, because I don't know what to do when it hits the fan on the street.
Right. Well, so first off, the unfortunately, the best answer to, well, the market went down this much, you kind of already had to be positioned ahead of that for what to do.
Right. Too late, right? At that point.
You can make a good decision every single second that you have. You know, you can basically make the best decision at that point, right? But you can't go back and rewrite history. And that's true for both asset classes.
Totally.
And relationships. but essentially, the way that we do it is, you know, you have to think about it. There's like four main macro environments that can exist, right? And if you think about it, on one axis, you have inflation and deflation. And on the other axis, you have some economic expansion or economic contraction. And the four combination of those give you four different economic environments, some which we've lived through, some which we our parents have lived through, and some, you know, haven't been lived through for two or three generations, at least in the United States. But they're all going to come to pass at some point in time, and certain assets do well in those, and some certain assets do poorly. And the very first part is you have to have exposure to have a tool that will work in any of those environments. So whenever there's a regime shift in the market, you have to have the tools in your portfolio to basically take advantage of that regime shift. And on top of that, there's active risk management techniques you can do. So for example, I'll give you one example. It may not be a surprise, even somebody who's not like deeply in the market every day, that the market tends to move a lot more up and down when things are bad than when things are good. When things are good, it almost never moves. But when things are bad, it's moving up and down like crazy. The headline, up 1,000 points, down 1,000 points, right?
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is there's a phenomenon called volatility clustering, where movement gets more movement. And not to go too technical with it, but we have some algorithms in our portfolio that are constantly looking for how much is something moving on any given day. And it turns out that movement yesterday is highly predictive of movement today. So you can gradually, like a dimmer switch, start to reduce risk as it comes up. And if you have other things in your portfolio that are already benefiting from the new regime, the act of reducing risk, and really what we do is keep risk constant over time. That, and you know, having diversified things that do good in other environments, it does, it's amazing. It's not, you know, we actually call it unfair retirement planning, because you compare a plan that has something like this in it to one that doesn't. And it's not fair to compare them.
It's not. I mean, I've analyzed plenty of people's retirement environments before they've placed capital with us, or even if they haven't, just for kind of a third party look. And what's interesting is I don't know anything about what they're in, right? I just see kind of what's happened over the history. And I mean, there's great volatility calculators out there that show you the cost of volatility. And if you can hedge that by 1%, I mean, you're talking about a lot of money over time. So that's really interesting that you guys have figured out a way to build in some of that risk hedge into that volatility. Super important.
I'm not going to go too detailed with it. We actually have a learning series on our website that if anybody wants to subscribe, they can go to damerscapital.com/performance. And we actually will send you the performance of the models. But one of the things that's in there is a video where we go pretty detailed about it, where we talk about it's not just the rate of return or the risk that you get. What's more important often is the return path or the percent that you're profitable on a rolling 12-month basis. Like, is your account higher than it was 12 months ago? Like, and if you think about your account being a perfect straight line, that's gonna be 100% of the time, right? You have no pain ever. It's just, what's the slope of it? So if you can optimize the return path or the shape of the line as it goes from the bottom left of the screen to the top right of the screen to make it more smooth, that's one of the most powerful factors for being able to live off of your money, which is really what we care about, right? You know? So, but I digress because that can get hairy real quick. I mean, I think the biggest thing that the real estate guys miss though is the power of correct diversification, the mathematical diversification that really creates like a free lunch. It's the only free lunch in investing that I know of. And, you know, it's because, you know, even in our real estate portfolio, we can hedge against the geography by buying in multiple regions. We can hedge against one particular property by having more than one property. We can hedge against the operator or the people managing it by having several different operators. And we do all this. And, you know, to a certain extent, the asset class, because we do have self-storage and mobile home parks, but we're kind of concentrated in that. The thing you can protect against is what if the macro environment is just not conducive to mobile home parks, right? And that can happen from time to time. I mean, we have a ton of research that says we don't expect that to be the case for 20, 30 years, maybe longer than that. But I think it's important to have assets outside of real estate that would actually do really well if that should happen, you know?
Yeah, and it's certainly something that we would be open to looking into because, we're not the smartest guys in the room. The reason that we like real estate is because it's what we know, right? I think you tend to shy away from things that you don't know. So if you can get around some smart people that can show you the best of both worlds, then, you know, we do preach diversification. I think it's an important thing to do. I think having all of your eggs in a mutual fund basket is a problem. I think having all of your eggs in one particular real estate property could be a problem. You know, I look at our diversification, like you just mentioned, in terms of different properties, different geographies, different asset classes. And, you know, that is almost like everyone's its own business. But yeah, I'd love to continue having that conversation into, you know, how real estate guys can further diversify. And I mean, who doesn't like a free lunch?
Yeah. And I kind of almost in closing on this, you know, the thing that I think a stock guy gets, that I think real estate guys get too, is, so real estate guys are really comfortable with the illiquidity of the asset class, whereas stock guys are completely uncomfortable with that. But the uncomfortableness of, I think there should always be some liquidity that you have available because it creates optionality. You have options that you can do things with when you have something you can convert to cash, right? So you can remain invested in a portfolio, let's say like the algorithms that we do, and you can convert that to cash or even borrow against it, you know, to go make something happen when an opportunity presents itself. And that liquidity, I think, is incredibly valuable. Most real estate guys get it through a HELOC. But, you know, for example, in our portfolios, we can borrow at 1% overnight against the collateral in our portfolios.
Up to what percentage?
To go out and buy real estate. What's that?
Up to what percentage? They only give you a certain leverage point, right?
Well, you know, they give you more than I would be comfortable taking, but, you know, I think a responsible amount for the, because we keep our portfolios so tight in risk, is somewhere around like 25% of your portfolio. But think about it this way. You have $1 million portfolio that's fully liquid. You have another $1 million in real estate. And now you have access to, let's say, $250,000 at 1% to go find a distressed deal when it comes. And if it doesn't come, you're still fully invested, because having cash sitting on the sideline waiting for something you know, if you have a deal, if you have cash for 6 months waiting to try to make, you know, 10% return, well, guess what? You didn't make 10% that year. You made 5%.
Right.
So, and that's what really counts, not what you said you got for the time that you were in the deal. So I think that that part's really important to have that efficiency.
Yeah. And we've had a couple of IBC guys on the show, right? The infinite banking concept guys that, you know, further leverage into whole life policies where they're, you know, doing both death benefit, but also liquidity through these policies, which is a pretty cool way to just create additional leverage, right? Additional access and additional benefit. All really interesting stuff. So I appreciate you taking the time to kind of lay out what your perspective is on all of these things. And in terms of real estate versus stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, obviously Free From Wall Street, we're skewed a little bit in one direction, but we are open-minded. We want to hear both sides of how people are doing well, because, you know, we know that it's out there, right? And you're living proof that you can do both and hedge against some of your downside risk, diversify well, and maybe pour some more gasoline on the fire in terms of retirement.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea for us, even, you know, every property should have reserves, right? So I think it when you have something like this, you can do it. It actually helps you feel good about keeping higher reserves for when something like, you know, collection rates become a problem. Or, you know, think about the guys who are in lodging or hotels, you know?
Yeah.
They probably need way more reserves than they thought.
Yeah, they're getting beat up right now. I mean, hopefully the world starts to open back up, but I know plenty of people in the retail space and hotels and different hospitality areas that are getting crushed right now. So yeah, you just, nobody has a crystal ball, right? You can only do the best that you can with what information you have. And yeah, it's important.
You know, both sides, you got to have a plan. So ours is coded on the algorithm side and the mobile home park side. We're just, you know, we feel very strongly about the fundamentals and the macro picture for that. So we're kind of value investors on that side, but no, I appreciate it. Steven.
That's awesome. So Damian, if somebody wants to reach out to you guys, learn more about Damers Capital, I know you gave us the website before, but how do they reach out to you directly and give us that website once again?
Sure. Probably the best way is to go to damerscapital.com. If you want to learn more about the models, you can check that out. We also have mobile home park funds. We're not currently raising right now, but we're going to be soon, and you can join the pre-launch list for our third fund. We tend to launch one, you know, every few months or every year. Well, and you can basically put in a little, I think we have also a white paper you could subscribe to. And if you sign up for any of those things, we'll reach out to you within a couple of days for sure. And you can connect with us if it makes sense.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. We, you know, it's always like drinking from a fire hose when we're speaking to a lot of data guys. I'm like the high level guy. So, but I appreciate, you know, kind of how you broke it all down. I'm excited to get together with you once New Jersey opens back up.
Well, and next time I got your mic right here, buddy.
That's right. We're just going to come over and we'll just rap a few times and we'll talk about all kinds of things.
Right.
So, well, thanks for listening to the Free From Wall Street podcast. If you haven't done so, go to freefromwallstreet.com and fill out the form and get the 5 things your financial advisor does not want you to know. We'll reach out to you and talk to you about what we're doing. And again, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and head over to freefromwallstreet.com and sign up for our free guides to help you and your family invest with purpose.